PressBox Banter is the Daily Iowan's weekly sports podcast. On each episode, we will talk about the latest athletics news, host a special guest, and make predictions for upcoming games. This week's edition features Chloe Peterson, a trending sports reporter for the Indy Star and an alum of the Daily Iowan. She's covered Caitlin Clark for both outlets and attended this week's WNBA draft. She shares her experience covering the event and how Clark will fit into the Indiana Fever team.
Hello guys, welcome to another episode of Press Box Banter. It's nice to see you guys again. My name is Chris, I am a sports reporter.
I think you mean hear you guys again. You're not saying anybody. Oh, it's fine. I'm just messing with you. This is Matt, sports reporter.
This is Kenna, sports editor. I've taken a hiatus from podcasts. I haven't been on the last like four episodes.
It's been a while. Yeah. It's been a while.
You've been a busy woman.
Yeah.
I'm back.
Yeah. What have you been doing?
All over the U.S.
Yeah, actually.
Albany,
Cleveland.
It's kind of crazy. This last month, I felt like I was at home for like a day. Like, I don't know if I had a stretch where I was home for like a full 48 hours, like for real. Yeah. I went to Maryland for Big Ten Wrestling, then Kansas City for Nationals, then Albany for the Sweet 16, Elite Eight, and then Cleveland. But it was pretty awesome, so.
Busy woman. Oh, man. I wonder how that went. That must have been hard with school and all that, but awesome experience to travel.
I'm not going to lie. I literally did not open Icon one time.
That's awesome.
Not a single time. I was like, I don't care. I'm going to soak this all in. I'm going to enjoy it. And, like, it helps because two of my classes are Wayne Dre's as my teacher. And when I told him he was going, he was like, okay, have fun. Like, he didn't care at all. So
there you go. Priorities.
That was nice. But I was like, I don't know. I have good enough grades. School is, you know, whatever. I'm never going to be here again. I'm not going to sit in my hotel room and do homework when I'm in New York.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. C's get degrees, guys. C's get degrees.
Yeah. But.
Anyway, especially in our field.
We are going to talk about, obviously, Caitlin Clark and Kate Martin getting drafted. We'll talk about Kate now, but we'll kind of leave Caitlin for our interview segment. We're going to have Chloe Peterson on from the Indy Star. She covers the Fever, so we'll talk about Caitlin with her, but we're going to start off with Kate Martin. She was the 18th pick in the draft. She went to Las Vegas Aces. They're back-to-back champions. She's joining, you know, a stacked team, so I'm very interested. You know, it's very hard to get on a roster, so I'm interested to see how that works. I mean, skill-wise, I don't know, like, if she's the most talented, but just attitude-wise, leadership-wise, it's like, of course you want her on your team. So, and I think she'd be great off the bench, too, as a role player. But, yeah, we'll see. I was just super happy for her. And I thought she would get drafted, but I thought it would be, like, third round if she did. So I was, like, pretty surprised that she went that early. And it was pretty awesome that she was in the crowd and everything. And seeing, like, Gabby tear up, it got me.
Yeah. It, you know, this championship teams, I feel like they see stuff differently than other teams do, especially with the Aces. You know, they drafted well, and, you know, when they see potential in a player, they jump at it. They see something in Kate Martin, especially, you know, leadership-wise, and the way she, you know, kind of helped Caitlin get to, you know, the promised land twice. Obviously, didn't, you know, get the job done, but Caitlin couldn't have done it by herself, and Kate Martin was arguably the biggest piece of that, especially in the second year. And, you know, it's kind of good for her, especially someone that was not, we're not looking at her as, or we shouldn't say that. It wasn't set in stone that she was going to get drafted. So, you know, the fact that she did get drafted is amazing, but to an organization like that where there's so many good players, you know, she's going to have time to learn from all of them, develop, and could really become a quality role player, or even maybe, you know, like a, you know, three option, two option in a WNBA. You never know where that could take her, but just there's been a history in NBA and WNBA of players learning from some of the best in the game, going to good teams, and then they end up becoming great players themselves because they had to learn early. So it could be a blessing in disguise, but I think, in my opinion, you know, she ended up in the right situation as far as, you know, where that could take her career is, or learning and skill-wise. She ended up in the best place possible, unless I'll get round of applause for getting drafted.
Yeah, unfortunately, the reality in WNBA is that not every draft pick is guaranteed a spot in the roster. It's an unfortunate truth. A couple years ago, Monica Sinano drafted 26th overall, didn't make the team. But I mean, being in the top 20 helps. And plus, what I see, like, that fadeaway shot, she sort of developed all of a sudden. I think WNBA team saw that, and I was like, all right.
Yeah, I have a
no
little
defense
story
can
that.
Really guard that.
Yep.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I have a little story about that. There was multiple times against LSU and against UConn, she had those step back, fadeaway jumpers, whatever. But against LSU, it was, like, in the final, like, 4 minutes, and it was, like, maybe I think they cut it to 8, and they kind of had some momentum, and then with the shot clock winding down, Kate, you know, hit just an off-balance, you know, off-balance jumper or whatever, and I was talking to Jan Jensen in the locker room after the game, and she said that Blake Clark, Caitlin Clark's older brother, was calling Kate Dirk for her jumpers, so that was funny. But no, I mean, she's always had that move, I feel like, but this postseason, I think, especially that LSU game when she put up 21 points and, you know, Iowa would not win that game without Kate Martin. I mean, they wouldn't be here. I mean, Iowa is not Iowa without Kate Martin these past however many years.
Well deserved getting drafted.
Yeah, super happy for her. She's just a very awesome human.
She will fit in nice with the Aces. Once she gets settled in, and who knows if she'll make a roster spot this year. She definitely, you know, deserves so, but that team is deepest team in the league. But yeah. If she stays, you know, if they draft her that high, then I feel like they see some in her. So why take the risk and, you know, drop somebody?
Right. And even if she gets cut this year, I just can't. I don't know. There's just something about Kate Martin. Like, you know, she's not going to give up. Like, I feel like she's so determined that she's going to be on a roster someday, like, if she's cut this year. Like, I don't know. I think she does eventually want to get into coaching, which I really hope when Lisa leaves, Kate Martin comes in. Mm-hmm. That would be awesome.
Mm-hmm. There we go. She'll be well-beloved, that's for sure. Like, she isn't now, but...
That would be something. Yeah, and she'll have Megan Gutherson with her on the Aces.
Yes, yeah. Forgot to mention that. But they played 2018-2019, so Megan's senior season when she won National Player of the Year and Iowa went to the Elite Eight, that was Kate's first year at Iowa, and she redshirted. But that's really cool. So I think that might help Kate, you know, feel a little bit more at home and adjust a little better, but... Matt, do you want to move on to men's basketball?
Yeah. And there's another PSA. May 25th, 8 p.m. Central Time, Fever Aces. So mark your calendars.
Here we go. That's coming up soon. That's right there.
On the men's basketball horizon, there has been some activity in the transfer portal. Fran McCaffrey did some investigating, and he found a player. His name is, I've got to pronounce this right. How do you say it? Thelwell? I don't know how to say it. Like, Drew
Thelwell?
I'm going to botch this.
Thelwell?
Yeah, well, Fran McCaffrey did some digging, and he emerged with Morehead State guard Drew Thelwell. And according to John Bonacamp, self-proclaimed OVC aficionado, Thelwell, he led the conference in assists per game, and assists and turnover ratio, and he was also top 20 nationally in assists and assists per game. So clearly this guy, he's a 6'3" guard. Obviously, he can pass the ball. He shot 43% from the field last season, 33% from three. He averaged 1.3 steals last year. Obviously, I was losing to Sante Bowen. I see this as a great addition, maybe even an upgrade over Bowen. Just a guy you can pass, capable shooter. He seems to do well on defense. Obviously, no offense to John, but Big Ten is a lot different than OVC. he's been at Morehead State for 4 years, they made the tournament last season, lost to Illinois, so he has some postseason experience. But yeah, this is the last season of eligibility. Gonna try it out with Iowa, and this the portal work's not done, but this is definitely a start.
Yeah, it definitely is. And you know, if you watch this team last year like we did, there was a clear missing piece in the playmaker. Like, when Brock Harding came in the game, provided energy, was a lot off his passing and his playmaking. And, you know, you can see how that really benefits the team. And when you have the starters, and, you know, Tony's a he did his role very well, but you know, gotta get on that. You know, Tony did his role as well as he could, but he's just not a natural point guard, and you could tell that was missing in the lineup. So we got someone that is a capable point guard, capable passer, and that could really play make and you know, put the ball in the hole when needed, put the ball in Owen Freeman's hands, Payne Sadford's hands if he comes back. So you know, that's a great addition for sure. Missing piece, and we got it.
Breaking news. Yeah, that literally just hit my phone. It's currently Wednesday, by the way, 5:50 p.m. Lucy Olson committed to Iowa, transfer from Villanova. She was third in the country in scoring last season. That is a huge pickup, losing Gabby, losing Caitlin, Kate, Molly. So that's a huge pickup for Iowa. Another, you know, guard coming in. I mean, you match that up with Sydney Affolter. We have Kylie. We have...
I'll brief it. Go ahead.
If someone Chris. Else, Chris, we're on the...
Go ahead.
That's great.
It's going to be short today. I'm going to get on it right after we done.
But I know Lucy, like, she came on a visit to Iowa on Tuesday, so...
Survived the tornado. The tornado did not faze her.
Right. She really came and saw the Midwest and Iowa in bad shape, but sounds like things went well. Bluder sold her, coaching staff sold her, teammates sold her. But, I mean, at this point, like, why would you not want to come to Iowa to play women's basketball? Like, I'm very excited for next season, and I don't think people are not going to show up. I think it's going to be exciting next year, and they still have lots of potential, you know. I don't expect them to go to the Final Four or be ranked in the top 10 or whatever, but, I mean, there's still a lot of good players, and she'll definitely help.
Yeah, Iowa's become a destination spot. It really has. I mean, if you don't want to go East Coast, try out the Midwest. You don't want to go East Coast, don't want to go West Coast, you want to stay in the Midwest, like, yeah, come to Iowa. I don't know if Lucy Olson, I don't know where she's from.
She was rated number 4 available player in the transfer portal by ESPN. She is from Pennsylvania.
Oh. There you go. Well, Villanova native.
Nice change. She took the Midwest at its worst. She clearly... She saw it at its worst, said, I can deal with this. I got Cover Rock, I got Arena, I got Lisa Bluder, I got this Iowa team. This will be fine.
You know, when we talked about it a couple weeks ago, the Caitlin Clark effect, and how it's going to linger after her playing days, this is what we're talking about, obviously. You know, Iowa's been a family-first program, a very welcoming program for a while, but when you got a player like Caitlin Clark that puts it on the national stage, now players are actually looking at it, and now they could actually really see from the true depths of it, you know, what a great program this is and how people, you know, want to take part in this program. You know, it's you can't help but say to yourself you want to play here. You want to be a part of this culture. And yeah.
Oh, gosh.
I mean, you can't help but you want to be a part of this program. And, you know, picking up a top 5 player in the transfer portal just speaks wonders, especially a player of her caliber that's such a willing scorer. And, you know, that could kind of take on the role of what Caitlin Clark had last year. Playmaking, you know, obviously it's not, I wouldn't say she's far below Caitlin, but Caitlin is like a superior playmaker, just as good of a scorer. So, you know, she's definitely going to be the head front of this franchise.
Yeah, I mean, and no one's on the same level mm-hmm. as Caitlin. Baseball, originally they had $27.5 million renovation plan for Dwayne Banks Field, new restrooms, more seats, a new entrance, better locker rooms, etc. And basically, they're halting that construction right now, and they're only focusing on a $5.5 million clubhouse because they don't have the correct funds for the $27.5 million. So that's a real big bummer for the baseball team, especially this season has been a huge disappointment, in my opinion. They had such high expectations going in, haven't really met them. And, you know, with these new teams coming in the Big Ten next year, it really would have been nice to have, you know, better facilities to put them on par with the rest of the conference. And that's not going to happen. They didn't say when those other major renovations will happen. They just said they're going to focus on the clubhouse now, and when they get money, they'll do the other stuff. But, you know, I don't know. Yeah.
Well, I don't want to spread misinformation on this podcast, but allegedly, it's all alleged.
Yes.
A big donor to the future Dwayne Banks Field is in prison.
Whoa.
Elaborate, please.
Yeah, allegedly.
Well, he is in prison, but we don't know if he's allegedly he is a.
He was like
a donor.
Yes, the main guy that Iowa was counting on for these renovations, for the $27 million. And he owes over $70 million to the bank. He was accused of fraud, and he's in jail. So basically, I think that's kind of why we don't have the money for it right now.
Yeah,
but that also could just not be the reason why. But that's what I've seen on social media. Okay.
We can ask the banks to fund banks.
Today we are talking with Chloe Peterson. She is a University of Iowa graduate. She worked at the Daily Iowan and was the sports editor last year. I learned so much from her. Glad she's here right now. But she works for the Indy Star now as a trending sports reporter, and she covers the Indiana Fever. And Caitlin Clark just got drafted, so we're going to be talking a lot about that today. But thank you for coming on, Chloe.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Good to be back in the DI things.
I wanted to ask, like, I feel like over here, some of us are a little burnt out with all the Caitlin content. Are you excited to cover her again? Or how do you feel about that? Do you think it's going to be easier because, you know, you've already covered her before?
Yeah, I think it'll be easier kind of in the sense of also I don't have to do school at the same time. So that's made my life a lot easier since I have left school, but I think it'll be interesting to cover her. I know I've talked to you guys, I've talked to other Iowa media like Dargan and Chad from the Morning Register about covering her, and I know it's been a really big year for them this year, and I think it's going to be kind of a big year for the Fever too, because last year there were only two people who covered the Fever full time, and it was me and one other person who worked for the Next. So I think this year it's going to be a lot more media, a lot more, you know, trying to figure things out. But hopefully I won't get burnt out from it. But doing it full time with not really any other distractions really helps.
Yeah, so trending sports reporter, what exactly does that mean? I've seen you do so many different sports. Like, what does a regular day look like for you?
I would say it started out kind of as a glorified, just like general assignment sports reporter. So I came on, I did Fever stuff when I first started, and then I also helped with the Indy 500. I helped with NASCAR, the Brickyard, and then some high school softball, some high school football, some Colts stuff. So basically just either something they want covered or something they want help on, like if they want a third writer on the Colts or a second writer on the Pacers, they kind of just send me to that. But I think my role has kind of moved more into basically just women's basketball. I covered IU women's basketball this past winter, and then I'm obviously going into my second season with the Fever, and that beat's going to become a lot more time-consuming, I think, than it was last year. So I will likely not be doing as much other, like, general stuff and more just Fever.
My name is Chris. Obviously, it's my first year at DI, so I did not have the pleasure to meet you, but I heard a lot of good things about you. And I'm pretty close with John, and he said a lot of good things about you and how hard you work. And you just kind of touched on, you know, it's kind of easier for you in a sense because you're not doing school along with the work. But from what you just said, you cover a lot of different sports, so I kind of just want to get your perspective on how challenging that could be, or if it's not challenging, or how interesting that could be in a sense of how just covering all multiple sports that just stick into one.
Yeah, it was kind of challenging at first because I came in last May right when IndyCar was kind of at the peak with the Indy 500, so I was kind of thrown into that my first week. And before I started IndyStar, I knew nothing about IndyCar. I barely even knew there were other motorsports leagues other than NASCAR. So that was new to me. And then it's kind of just, I thought the hardest thing about it, I think, was just to, like, get a working knowledge of all the sports. Like, I didn't know who any of the IndyCar drivers were when I started, so I had to learn all that. I knew Tyrese Haliburton from the Pacers, but I didn't know much else about the Pacers. I didn't follow them very much, so I had to learn a lot about that and a lot about the Colts, too. But I think the beginning of it was a lot more difficult because I didn't have the working knowledge of, you know, just the sports in general. But now that I'm kind of almost a year into it, it's gotten a lot easier because I just know things off the top of my head now.
For sure, yeah. And so when you're covering a sport, like say the Indy 500, when you said you know nothing about it when you started, so then how's that process like of just trying to learn as much as you can to be a better writer to cover that sport?
I think a lot of it was who I was covering it with. Our motorsports writer, Nathan, he is probably the most knowledgeable person about IndyCar and motorsports in general that I know, obviously, and he follows them everywhere to every race. So, and he was very helpful to just, you know, tell me things that, you know, might have been stupid questions, but he, you know, he answered them. He didn't, you know, kind of brush me off or anything. And kind of all of the reporters here have done that to a sense, which has been very helpful in just getting my bearings with everything.
So you covered the Indianapolis 500, but you also were at the WNBA draft in Brooklyn. What was that experience like? I'm sure there was probably way more media that attended that than previous years.
Yeah, it was chaotic. I think they said there were 300 different media members there, and the space they had for media only had about space for 150, so that was kind of its own, you know, issue in of itself. But there were also, like, obviously a lot of photographers, a lot of social media people credentialed, so we weren't all 300 people in one room at once. But it was a very chaotic time of, obviously, Caitlin was the one with the most media attention, so it was kind of like finding a time to talk to her, to get her one-on-one just for a couple minutes. And I ended up following her up the stairs backstage to talk to her for a second after she went on ESPN. So that was a kind of interesting experience, something I'd never really done before. But everyone in WNBA in the league was very helpful, very flexible, very accommodating. That helped a lot.
So did you just, like, you just walked up to her, tapped her on the shoulders, like, hey, what's up? Do you remember me? Like, I covered you back in college.
I didn't do that. She had an escort within the WNBA who kind of told me, like, hey, follow us up the stairs and you can talk to her. But then she saw me and she was like, oh, it's nice to see you again. Which, you know, it was nice of her to say that, because I think at the point that I talked to her, she was very burnt out because she had been doing media for, like, 2 hours at that point, or an hour and a half. So it was good that she, you know, remembered me, kind of took the time to talk to me, and I was really grateful for that.
And then you obviously covered them, the Fever, last year. You know their strengths and weaknesses. How will Caitlin fit into this team?
I think she'll fit in pretty perfectly. I think once the Fever got the number one pick in December, they tried to start building their team, building their free agency acquisitions around her, and obviously just hoping they got her. So they already have a pretty strong front court in Aaliyah Boston, the 2023 number one pick, obviously, and then Nelissa Smith, who was the 2022 number two pick. So they're really good together, and they're really strong, and they never had any issues last year, to the point where I thought if the Fever didn't get the number one pick, they probably would have traded the pick, because they didn't need Cameron Brink, Camilla Cardoso, or Rekia Jackson. But, and then they brought in Katie Lou Samuelson from, in free agency from Los Angeles Sparks. And she's a really good a combo guard forward. And then they have Kelsey Mitchell at the two. And she's kind of been the cornerstone of the Fever since about 2018. She's kind of the first cornerstone since Tamika Catchings left in 2016. So they had those four aspects, and all they needed was really a true, like, pass-first point guard or a point guard that had a really strong passing ability.
And I know, like, to make a roster in the WNBA is very difficult. I mean, I would assume Caitlin's going to make the roster, but, like, I'm just like, what if everyone hypes this up so much and then she doesn't even make the roster? But I think she, I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
I definitely think she'll make the roster. I don't think there's any doubt in that. She's too good of a player to not make it, and she's too hyped to not make it, I would think. She'd probably shock the entire WNBA if she got cut. But from what I've seen, usually number one picks don't get cut in their first couple years. I know the, I believe it was the 2021 number one pick. She got cut this past season for 2023. But it never really usually happens in the first year, I would say, because they haven't really even had the chance to prove themselves in the WNBA yet. So I think she will make the roster definitely. But the Fever's other two picks are obviously up in the air, because I think last year it was 15 of 36 picks that actually stuck on the roster. So, and one of those picks was number 25, Victoria Saxton, who stuck on the Fever's roster. So, like, even if you're top 15, you don't really have a guarantee to make it on the roster, but usually 1 through 5, I would say, stick for at least a couple years, if not more.
Yeah, and that was that's another thing I kind of want to touch on, because obviously we got Caitlin Clark, but there was two more picks, but most specifically, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Celeste Taylor from Ohio State, and I know she's a really good defensive player, so at least from what you know from her now, do you think that she will make a roster spot, and if she does, she stays on the team, how do you think she will affect the Fever's rotation at all?
I think she has a pretty good chance to stick just because of her defensive abilities. She was obviously the Big Ten Defensive Player of the Year. So she has that, and she's a strong defender, and that's one of the things that I think Clark, you know, kind of struggles with, is her defense. So having Celeste Taylor there could kind of balance that out a little bit as well, and kind of have a strong person for Clark to go up against in practice and learn from in practice, as well as, you know, bring that out onto the court during games. So I think she has a pretty decent chance of making the roster, but that's also, you know, it's all up in the air when it comes to the WNBA rosters.
Yeah, and you just touched on Caitlin. Obviously, we talked about her almost the whole time. I mean, for good reason. But one thing that I've seen on the internet is, it's not a huge topic, but I've seen it floating around of, you know, Caitlin has had times where, you know, her attitude could, or her grittiness, or, you know, she could be really passionate about the game. It kind of shows. Sometimes she will bark at the refs a little bit. She'll say some stuff, do some stuff on the court that's a little, you know, controversial, and you've seen her dad tell her to literally shut up on the court. And there has been a clip I've seen of someone saying in a WNBA, like, they're going to shut that down, that's not going to happen, they're not going to handle that. So at least from what you've seen from this Fever team last year with the coach, or just players as you know them, how do you think they'll take that, and do you think they'll be, like, supportive in trying to adjust that part of her, or do you think they're just going to let her be how she is because she's such a good player and they shouldn't change her?
I think when it comes to, obviously, her passion on the court, I think they're going to let that slide, or not let it slide, but kind of encourage that, because, you know, it's good to have, you know, that emotion, that passion on the court, and obviously, when you're a rookie in the WNBA, you don't get the calls, really. That's something I've heard a lot as rookies. You don't get the calls that maybe the vets would, and that it was the same thing that happened with Aaliyah Boston last year. She got a lot of calls that she thought she didn't or she shouldn't get, and she kind of argued with the refs a little bit about them, but it's just one of those things that you kind of have to work through. But when it comes to kind of working with her teammates, one of the things I thought was funny about that Wright Thompson profile was, you know, about how she refused to pass to her teammates, and Kate Martin, McKenna Warnock got up in her face about it. And I'm not sure if she'll be the same when she goes to this. I think she's obviously matured from that, and she knows she's going to be going in with some great players like Aaliyah Boston, like Nelissa Smith. And I think she herself has kind of matured to the point where she knows how this works, and she knows how good her teammates are going to be when it comes to being with the Fever.
So, I mean, obviously back in college, Caitlin broke Kelsey Plum's record, or all-time scoring record for the women in the women's game. But Kelsey Plum, she didn't average double-digit scoring to her fourth season in the league. So, like, what are the expectations for Caitlin? Is it really rookie of the year or bust?
I think when it comes to that, I think rookie of the year or bust is kind of fair. That to say she'll be, like, the best of the rookies, I think, is fair to say. But I don't think she's going to be kind of in the MVP conversation, really, this year. Because, you know, that's obviously a big transition to the league. That's a faster pace of play. You only have 24 seconds on the shot clock compared to 30. And obviously the players you're playing against are a lot stronger than those in the Big Ten. So I think she's going to have an adjustment period. And there's the fact that she doesn't have to score 30 points a game with the Fever. Like, she has Kelsey Mitchell to help make three-pointers. She has, you know, Aaliyah Boston in the paint. So it's not something where she kind of has to make all of these shots, kind of will Indiana like she kind of had to will Iowa. So I think her numbers, at least her scoring numbers, will go down a bit. I feel like it'll probably be like 15-ish a game. Aaliyah Boston averaged, I believe it was 14 or 15 last season. And I think Clark will be about the same. And I think she will be the rookie of the year unless something terrible happens. But I think it'll still be kind of a transition year for her. And she won't really be considered one of the best players in the league, like on the same plane as Asia Wilson or Sabrina Ionescu yet. It would be a couple, she can get to that obviously in a couple years, but her first year won't really be that year of MVP.
And then how about for just the Fever as a team? Like, obviously they finished 10th in the league last year, I think. So kind of outside the playoff picture, but with Caitlin Clark, what are their expectations?
I think it's a fair expectation for them to be in the playoffs. They were in the playoff race pretty close to the end of the season. I think they were eliminated with 3 or 4 games left. I can't remember specifically. But they were in the playoff, like, conversation last year for the first time in, like, 5 years, I think. And this year, I think they will be kind of one of those lower seeds, and they'll get into the playoffs, but I don't really expect them to go past maybe the first round, maybe the semifinals if, you know, everything really comes together. But I think they're expected to be a playoff team at the very least this year, but I'm not sure if there's much more expected from them.
All right, and obviously at the draft, you were there to cover the Fever, but you being an Iowa grad, I know you definitely, as all Iowa City, we all noticed when Kate Martin got drafted. I guess for you, what was that moment like, knowing that, you know, like, it was, I think, the first time in Iowa history too, two Iowa players drafted in the same year?
Yeah.
So then you being an Iowa grad covering them last year, talking to them, how did that feel for you, and did you have a chance to talk to her at all at the draft?
Yeah, I thought it was exciting that she got pulled out of the audience to be drafted, and it was just really funny that she was there to support Caitlin. And I know she said that she, you know, was hoping to be drafted, but obviously it wasn't really that much of an expectation. So just having her kind of come out of the crowd, hugging Jada Jimfey, kind of walking up there and being able to have that moment, like, even not being invited, seemed really exciting. But since she wasn't invited, she didn't have a media escort, so they tried to get her up to the media room to talk to her, or for her to talk to us, the media, but she left the building before they could find her. So that was a little bit unfortunate.
There was a funny video of, like, the announcers or whatever were, like, in the same room with you guys, and, like, Caitlin could hear everything that they were saying about her. Did you just, in general, did you like the setup? Was it weird? What did you think about, you know, the analysts being in the same room?
I thought it was a fun setup. The Brooklyn Academy of Music is, it's a very nice venue. It's obviously a theater. They had about, I think, 1,400 fans there. And I think it was kind of a dilemma for the WNBA because this is the first year they had fans. So they wanted to bring fans in, but they didn't really know how big to make it because of Caitlin Clark. They knew there was, they didn't even know if she was going to be in the draft when they, you know, picked the venue. But there was kind of the dilemma of, is this too small? But then there was all this hype around Caitlin. Will there be the hype next year? Should they try to get bigger or try to go bigger for the draft, or just kind of keep it the same because they don't know if the hype is going to be around the draft the same way as it was this year? But I thought when it comes to the broadcasters set up, it was really interesting, I thought, because they were kind of set up in the back of the theater behind, obviously behind the stage, behind a lot of seats. So if they didn't pipe their broadcast into the theater, like through the theater speakers, I don't think Caitlin would have been able to hear them. But they did do that, which I thought was interesting because obviously she could hear them talking about her in their 5-minute segment about her before she was officially picked, and that she could hear them saying, you know, she's about to be picked by the Fever and she's gonna be their generational talent. But I thought it was funny. Her mom was wearing a Fever pin before she was even drafted too, which I thought was cute. But it was an interesting setup. There wasn't really any air conditioning, so that was unfortunate. But other than that, it was a very nice venue.
And Caitlin kind of, she went on the Pat McAfee show today, and the first question she got asked was if she knew that she was going to get drafted by the Fever with the words set in stone, and she said, yeah, she was pretty confident. She knew she was going to get drafted by the Fever. So you being an insider, dude, I know she said it too. She said that she hasn't talked to the Fever. I don't know how long ago that video was. I just seen it recently. But do you know if the Fever contacted her at all previously to tell her that they were going to pick her? Or I'm assuming it was always going to be her. But, like, do you know if they had any contact that she was told by them personally that she was going to get picked number one?
I'm not sure if they were allowed to tell her that. Before, like, I think it was after the Final Four that they were, like, able to talk a lot. But I know as soon as they got the number one pick officially, I think it was December 10th that they got the pick. I think less than a week later, Fever's head coach Christy Sides was in Iowa City for one of Iowa's games. And then the Fever assistant GM was in, was at Purdue in January for Iowa's game against Purdue. And then both Christy Sides and their GM, Lynn Dunn, they were both in Bloomington for Iowa's game against Indiana, which, you know, they ultimately lost, but it was still something to watch Clark. And I'm not sure if they were really allowed to talk to her until after she finished college. But I know they had a lot of meetings between, you know, the national championship and the WNBA draft. There's about a week in between that. And I know they have meetings in between then, so I'm sure they talked to her at that point before they drafted her officially.
So, like, looking at the Fever schedule this season, what are some games that you, like, kind of highlighted saying, like, hey, this is going to be, like, a tough game for Caitlin, or this is going to be, a pivotal game for where she can prove herself?
I think she's kind of being thrown into the fire with the first two games. The first one is the Connecticut Sun in Connecticut. So she'll be going up against Alyssa Thomas, who finished second in MVP voting last year and got more first place votes than Breanna Stewart, who actually did win MVP and who had the league's first triple-double in history. So Alyssa Thomas is kind of one of the best point guards, if not the best point guard in the WNBA. And it'll kind of be one of those things where how does Caitlin stack up to her? And it's her first game. And then after that, she goes to the Liberty, or she plays the Liberty, and they have Sabrina Ionescu, they have Breanna Stewart, Courtney Vandersloot, and that's going to be a gauntlet of a game because not only are those players more experienced, but they have been studying her this entire college season. Some of them are analysts, they know her tendencies, and I think some of them, you know, want to make a statement in the sense of, you know, she's a hyped up rookie, but I'm a WNBA vet and I'm better, basically.
And how does that go where, you know, last year the Fever were kind of on the back end of the national attention, like only one nationally televised game to this year, and I got 36 out of 40. And it's kind of crazy how to flip scripts just with one person, and you know, and you seeing obviously probably not to the magnitude that we saw it this year, but you seen the hype that Caitlin Clark could have, and now going to the Fever where the hype is being translated right as it was how it was in college. So, how does that go with the team? Like, is that like a little? Do you feel like that's a little extra pressure for the team to perform now that they're going to have the most televised games? Or
yeah, I feel like it definitely could be some more pressure. Obviously, Clark has been in a lot of high pressure games, and she knows how to perform in those, and Aaliyah Boston is the same way. And I think a lot of these players have been in high-pressure games in college, like Lexi Hull, who will probably be coming off the bench for the Fever. She won a national championship with Stanford. And then Melissa Smith came from Baylor, and she, I believe, won a national championship too. So there's a lot of like players who have been in these pressurized situations, especially in the postseason. So I think, I'm not sure if they've really experienced it on the WNBA level, but they at least can pull from their experiences from college and, you know how to deal with that pressure and how to work through it.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Chloe, for coming on and giving us some more insight on Caitlin and what you do. It was really nice having you and catching up with you.
Well, it appears every season really is football season. There does not appear to be an off season. I feel I had a break in February, some of March, and yeah, now we're back at it again. April 20th, Iowa spring game. Get ready for the trash cans on the field. Cade McNamara will definitely not be out there. Don't expect him to even be wearing pads. I guarantee you he will be in street clothes. He will throw maybe two passes, and he won't step into his throws. He is limited right now. He's not very mobile. Well, there was a video of him running at that open practice a few weeks ago, but don't expect him to be in pads and rolling out of the pocket. Keep expectations low for Cade. He's on progress, but let's not panic.
It's Deacon Hill show, baby.
Oh, yeah. I want to see a 70-yard bomb. That's going to miss the receiver by 10 yards.
The Deacon Beacon.
It'll be... Yeah.
Tim Lester, work your magic.
He better work on his tush push game. I want to see that tush push work. He should be working at six linemen on the tush push.
I'm sure every Iowa media member will be counting how many times someone goes in motion in the Iowa scrimmage. I guarantee.
But yeah, just they've had some spring media availability these past couple weeks, and they've talked a lot about new offensive coordinator Tim Lester. Hill said that everyone really likes Lester. That's what it seems. They said he has a infectious energy that he brings to practice every day, and he was also a former quarterback, so he has that something that Brian Ferentz did not have, and so he's working with the quarterbacks a lot more. And I've heard several players say that Lester, you know, goes around to each position and tells them specifically like what he wants them to do and why they're doing it, which I think is helping them a lot. But, yeah, I've heard lots more pre-snap motion. Caleb Brown said it's more wide receiver friendly. Well, we'll see how that all works. But just from what I've heard, it sounds, you know, encouraging. But and people are going to overreact with this spring game. Like,
oh, yeah.
Overreact. Oh, yeah. I mean, they don't even, like, they're still learning.
Not even, it's not even a game.
Yeah, they're still learning Lester's offense. Like, it is, it's different. And Hill said that, like, Kirk has been mainly working with the O-line, and it's really been, like, the Lester show on offense. So, like, I think Kirk has given up a little bit of the reins, at least, to Lester. And, like, but I don't know. People are going to overreact with the depth chart and the spring game and that Deacon Hill is having the one reps, whatever. But I don't know. I'm just excited. I'm excited to see Luke Lachey back out on the field.
Yeah, yeah.
He's an awesome player, and he said the tight ends are, you know, a focal point of the offense and going to be just as, you know, utilized as other years, which I wouldn't expect Iowa to ever go away from their tight ends. That would be insane to do.
Tight end university.
Yeah, I believe, what was his name?
Still got another George Kittle, TJ Hockenson. What's his name? Sam LaPorta.
Oh, my God. Who's the guy who had the pick against Nebraska? Oh, Ethan Herkert. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, Ethan Herkert was saying, obviously he's a defensive player. He doesn't know the offense too well. But he was saying that they still utilize that Tim Lester, obviously his famous quote, I love tight ends. But he said that Lester, that tight ends are still being used like just as often as they were in the past, just used differently. So he didn't comment about what that difference was, but it'll be interesting to see what those tight ends do. I mean, the spring game is going to be a day for the offense. I'm sorry for the defense. They're just out there to be out there. No one's getting tackled.
No one's worried about the defense.
Yeah, no one's worried about them either. Yeah, like I know obviously the secondary is taking a hit without Cooper DeJean, but obviously I'm confident in Deshaun Lee. He had playing experience last year. I think he's only going to get better.
They're going to be fine.
Yeah, barring, you know, anything like that happened last year. No more injuries.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, yeah. We should talk to offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, special teams coordinator, and whoever the health the trainer is.
Oh,
that
was
a joke.
Who?
No, that was a joke. Oh. Saying like, okay. Talk to the trainer and make sure we're not gonna have any more.
Yeah.
Or who's in charge of the turf? Come on now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't need Deacon Hill to be slipping and sliding out there. We don't need that.
Let's hope for no rain, no nothing happens. We can't have Deacon get hurt. You know, when he falls, man, it's gotta be a lot on the knees and the lower body.
Yeah.
Let's go, Deacon, Beacon. We have faith. We have faith. We believe to a certain extent, but we got faith.
It'll also be interesting to see. I imagine Mark Alino's will get a lot more snaps Saturday as well. Obviously, he played in the bowl game, only threw for 6 yards, but looked like Lamar Jackson and Justin Fields out there scrambling for his life. Had more rushing yards and like less than 5 minutes than the Iowa team did heading up to that point. So obviously he can move his legs, but I mean in the spring game we're gonna see how well he can throw the ball.
I mean,
so.
Lamar Jackson was a MVP in his second year. Justin Fields has just been traded to get a rookie spot.
They're both dynamic in the run. They're both in terms of running quarterbacks. They are almost at the same echelon.
There we go.
Almost
skill set. There we go.
But let's not put Marco Linus in that territory yet. Sorry, Marco. You are no JF1.
We miss him already.
Although Caleb Brown said the Lester offense is more wide receiver friendly, Iowa did just have a wide receiver enter the transfer portal.
True.
Jacob Bostic, who he was injured. He's been injured a lot. Like,
yeah.
He really hasn't played that much at Iowa at all. I think he has 4 years of eligibility remaining.
He might, yeah.
But, I mean, he was expected to – I mean, he was going to be in – top 3 or 4 receivers, right?
I think so. I mean, don't the spring depth chart. I mean, obviously, with what they lost in Vines and Reganey, he was going to get a shot this year.
Right. I mean, Caleb Brown, obviously. Then
Seth
there's
Anderson.
Jarrett Bowie.
Okay. I was going to say.
Seth Anderson,
who?
Yeah. But, I mean, I think he would have had seen more time on the field, is what I was getting at. But, you know, we don't know what goes on behind the scenes, so. No criticism or anything, but just wanted to point it out.
Yeah, I sat behind Jacob Bostic at a class once. He always showed up in some kind of crutches or band or brace. It was kind of sad to see. But yeah. He went to class, so shout out student athlete Jacob Bostic.
Student athlete.
Yeah.
There you go. Emphasize on the student.
Yeah, because as they say, NFL is no guarantee.
Nothing's a guarantee.
Yeah, yeah. And the NFL also stands for not for long.
But when you're a Hawkeye, there's a chance.
Okay. I don't know about that. We'll see.
Especially when you want defense.
Especially in NFL draft next week. Cooper DeJean over under top 25.
Make your picks right now. I'm gonna go right under.
Under, okay. Under. Top 25 picks.
Detroit Lions, make it happen. Sam LaPorta.
What pick do they have?
Jack Campbell, 27.
27. That's over 25.
Over? Did I say under?
You said under.
Oh, man. I'm not a better
under.
If you can't.
He's
tell.
Under?
That's a
he's
good
under.
Thing.
We got under, we got over. I'm going to go over.
I'm going to go over. I'm going to go
if
right
like
over.
My dad,
right
you'd over. Say he'd go in the fourth round.
Well, your dad.
He's a bear.
You can say it, say it. He doesn't. He really doesn't.
Bear. Make
that's
it happen.
No.
He is, quote, good at backpedaling. That's what
a
I've
bear.
Seen. But I also read a great scouting report on Cooper DeJean from The Athletic, and it broke down his tape very well. And he's got weaknesses, but he has strengths. So,
yeah. I mean,
the NFL team's going to look at that. They're going to make their decision. But it's going to be first round.
Yes.
But I'd...
After his athletic testing, though?
Yeah, he's got to show it on the field.
Right outside the top 1% in athletic testing overall, and that's crazy.
And that was still, I mean, he
make no
just
jokes,
got
yeah.
cleared after his injury. He can't possibly be like 100%.
Mm-hmm.
And those were still impressive numbers. But I'm going under.
Okay, I'll go over. Okay. I'll say first round. Just no Packers and no Cowboys. I'll be fine. Just no Packers, no Cowboys.
Pack Nation, stand up.
What?
I'm sorry. I grew up in a Packers.
Oh, okay.
I was in the Chicago
don't tell
area,
me you're
a
Bears
a
fan,
pa-
too.
I grew up in a Packers family, but I'm a Chicago fan always.
Oh, then don't be saying... Pack Nades, don't be saying that.
I wore a cheese head
a bad
at 90
word.
So
whoa, and
I'm not gonna lie.
That's cardinal sin.
Wherever Cooper goes, I'm supporting, man. I'm supporting.
Well, I'm not. If he goes to the Packers, he's dead to me.
Okay.
I'll say it.
It's okay, Cooper. You still got my faith, bro.
Agree to disagree. Packers still suck. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Good.
Thank you for listening to PressBox Banter. This episode was hosted by Matt McGowan, Kenna Roaring, and Chris Meglio, and produced by Natalie Dunlap.